Welcome to Sticks and Stones, an exhibit of fairy tale land artifacts created as a part of Pod Together 2013. Curated by Somnolent Blue, installed by Giggling Cat, and guided by Fleur Rochard. Greetings, and welcome to Sticks and Stones, the Building of a Kingdom, the inaugural exhibit of the newly renovated Museum of the Kingdoms, and the first in a planned sequence exploring the threads of fate and agency from which our history is woven. Sticks and Stones focuses on the warp and weft of our lives, our land, our shelter, our food, and our families. Later exhibits will address more esoteric and philosophical themes. Before we start our tour, the museum, of which I'm a duly contracted and bonded representative, and yes, that means I'll have full authority to resolve any incidents which may arise during your visit, would like to thank the Troll Recreational Olympic Lunching League, the Witches International Tribunal and Council of Highly Exemplary Sorcerers, the Supreme Nabob of Pixiedom, and the Princesses Guild for their generous support. I am Roaring Briar, and I have been designated your tour guide for this day. I would thank you to keep your comments regarding my name to yourself. Remember, what's the first rule? Right. Always be polite to the kindly elder offering you advice. Now, what's the second rule? Correct. Never tickle a sleeping dragon. I'll leave the selection of which rule is pertinent to your powers of discernment. Now, please follow me through the archway. As you can see, Mr. Grant, the archway is calibrated to lead us into the exhibit. It does not, contrary to your supposition, lead nowhere. Now, based on your chaperon's calm expression, I'm going to assume that all of you have made it through the doorway into the tea room. Please join me around the glass case in the middle, but do mind your step around our other guests. Your continued existence and well-being, thank you for your care. We are standing in the tea room, which serves as a general portalway and as our gift shop. Before you is the tea set of Georgiana, Queen of the Dragons. I see your skepticism, but no, it is not too small for a dragon. Honestly, do they teach you nothing these days in school? Dragons are shapeshifters. Moreover, they often engage in diplomatic dances and therefore are fully prepared to treat of all races in comfort and equality. This particular set was commissioned as a gift from Aurora, who wanted to thank Georgiana for her aid in ridding Aurora's kingdom of a rogue dragon, while Aurora was under an inconvenient spell of slumber. It is calibrated to provide the brew most suitable to the guest, whether it's the potent aroma of stewed pestilence during visitations from the Riders of the Apocalypse, magical infused sanguine when the undead call, or a strong willow bark when headaches abound. Please note the delicate hand-painted scrollwork typical of pixie artisans. It has been conjectured, although never conclusively proven, that the set was meant as a courting gift as well as a token of a favour owed. One would not, of course, venture to speculate without evidentiary support, but it is a charming theory. Stop, Miss Beauregard, do not... Well, I guess it was inevitable that someone would ignore the posted signs. As you can see, the pomegranate seeds allow one to truly immerse oneself in the exhibit. Oh, stop fretting! Your chaperone is perfectly calm, and it behooves one to take one's cue from one's elders. The spell will wear off on the next new moon, and until then she will be able to contemplate the meaning of fine print. You do remember the waivers, do you not? And have an extraordinary opportunity to people watch. Frankly, I've considered eating them myself just to get a moment of rest. Now, as we leave the room, please note the sword to the right of the door. It is the Sword of Aurora, and if you'd like to read more about it, you can select from a variety of accounts, all of which are for sale in our gift shop. Yes, Mr. Stilinski, it is as you so eloquently put it, cool. But no, it is not inherently magical. The magic is in the skill of the bearer. Please, pick up one of the laminated sheets in the bin at the hedge maze's entrance, and then follow me into its depths. A head count leads me to believe that the Minotaur did not kidnap any of you. Very good. Do not fret about the ominous clouds. The creators voted to sacrifice verisimilitude and keep the exhibit free of rain. However, keep in mind that were you on a true quest, it would inevitably be pouring kittens and puppies to add to your misery and test your resilience. Now, mazes are a classic trial presented to those who quest. Sometimes the mazes are built of briars, other times they are built of stone, and upon occasion they exist only in the quester's head. Usually they spontaneously appear, forming out of the earth during darkness and, upon occasion, rather surprising a farmer who goes to plough his or her field the next morning. They are considered harbingers of tales to come, and the individuals who own the land upon which they appear usually do one of two things. They either open inns and start betting pools, hoping to financially benefit from the upset to their lives, or they sell the land to the local ruler and move three kingdoms over. The local ruler is, of course, obligated to purchase it after the accords, although it has been suggested that there is a correlation between such a purchase and the ruler's offspring abruptly being shipped to boarding school. Part of the labyrinth's peculiar nature is that they integrate the physical components of the fallen into their own edifices and infrastructure, so that every person who fails to correctly answer the gatekeeper's questions strengthens the maze. The sheet in your hand contains the answers to all questions which will be posed to you in this interactive exhibit. Additionally, the spells have been altered so that you will not die upon incorrectly answering. However, I would not recommend Miss Pevensey giving the wrong answer in the spirit of scientific inquiry. As soon as I dismiss you, you will have 2 hours to work your way through the maze. While you do so, please take notes of the broadsides on the wall. This is a pedagogical trip for you, and it is, if you remember, expected that you will write an essay upon your return to school. I would advise you that careful attention to the broadsides should allow you to have an informed opinion about the conspiracy theories surrounding fairy godmothers. Of course I have an opinion about their culpability in the periodic upheavals that engulf the kingdoms. However, it is not appropriate for me to share it with you. I would suggest that, instead, you make a careful examination of the evidence and draw your own conclusions. Of particular interest within this exhibit are the tax returns of the Kingdom of Robert de Raynon, more commonly known as Robert the Green or the Frog Prince. The rise in vegetarianism after the then Prince Robert was transformed into an amphibian ruined many industries involved in the consumption of fauna, including related industries such as tanning and culinary institutes, and caused havoc within neighboring kingdoms who had depended upon the lands of Prince Robert to supply them a particular subspecies of frogs, found only within that kingdom, which is preferred for diplomatic dinners with the merfolk. However, that is enough guidance from me. Your chaperone and I will join you at the end of the maze. I will reiterate once more, do not deviate from the answers on your sheet, do not take more than 2 hours, and do take notes on the broadsides. Good, I see you have all made it. Miss Jones, that is a very tidy job of bandaging your classmates' injuries. I commend your neatness and suggest that you consider the Healers' Collegium when the time for advanced study comes. Now, let us go through the wood door in the middle of the pathway. Follow me and do not take the stone door on the left or the wooden door on the right. Just as our world creates its own magnificent edifices in the form of labyrinths, whirlpools, and shadow forests, we sentient beings have shaped our environs since time immemorial in ways large and small. In this room, we explore some of the many techniques the citizens of the kingdoms have built to suit their own tastes and needs. Before you is the cottage of the Witch of the Deep Dark Forest. She was the cousin of the Witch of the Singing Trees, the mother of the Witch of the Enchanted Tea Cakes, and the grandmother of Eleanor, the current chief baker of the Fairy Godmother's Central Meeting House. However, she is more commonly known as the chief enemy of Hansel and Gretel, the two children who went on to become their kingdom's most celebrated witch hunters. If you were paying attention, which I sadly doubt, you would have noticed evidence of their historical existence beyond the myths that circulate about them now, from the contemporary accounts in the labyrinth. Yes, I said myths. I highly doubt that either of them could summon lightning at will. It's too upsetting for the local weather systems, and the utter chaos that would have resulted would probably have washed away their kingdom and all trace of their existence. No, Mr. Graham, of course she didn't try to eat them. Eating one's own species has been forbidden since the Accords, and no one, much less a minor witch, would have violated such a major article. And yes, biologists have conclusively determined that witches, sorcerers, and other users of magic are Homo sapiens sapiens and not a distinct evolutionary branch. Let us return to the topic at hand. The cottage. Do not touch that button for further information, Miss Granger. Visit us again if you feel the overwhelming need to hear the Witch of the Enchanted Tea Cakes rather long and detailed account of her poor maligned mother's cottage, including the origin of every single scrap of building material. The cottage was shaped from raw materials mined, quarried, and harvested from Candy Mountain. The witch, in order to truly bond with the resultant abode, would have had to make the customary blood offering from her own body. Feel free to look at the cottage from all angles and peer through the windows. However, I recommend that you do not enter its door, for the historical recreation activates in surround sensory sound, and you will not be able to leave until it has completed. Frankly, I do not have the time to twiddle my thumbs for the next 20 minutes waiting for you to get out. Additionally, some of the smells and sounds are rather unpleasant if you are of delicate constitution. Different kingdoms often have a distinctive architectural style, depending on the proximity of resources, such as Candy Mountain to Deep Dark Forest, or alliances with different peoples and guilds. For example, the most sophisticated trollish architecture outside of Trolldom is to be found in kingdoms like Ruritania and Jekyll, which are riddled with rivers that allow the trolls to show off their magnificent bridges. The finest examples of draconic architecture can be viewed by visiting the Kingdom of Sleeping Briars, which maintains treaties with draconic cooperatives. Unfortunately, this trek is often considered impossible due to the kingdom's penchant for changing its geographic location. However, the miniature castle and cavern in the Crystal Case are a meticulous recreation of the Kingdom of Sleeping Briars Castle, built in the time of Aurora, and the office cavern of the duly elected Queen of the Dragons, who serves a 10-year term as her cooperative's chairwoman. And now, in order to proceed into the next room, you are going to have to take a bite from the porridge wall surrounding it. The utensils have all been magically sterilized, and the porridge is magically programmed to not cause allergy attacks or other health-related complications, even for obligate carnivores. Congratulations, you have all successfully fed yourselves and entered this, the fourth room in our tour. Historically, we have taken advantage of natural resources such as Candy Mountain, the natural dust produced by a unicorn's horn, and seven leek cows to build our homes, feed our bodies, and transport ourselves across geographic boundaries. Managing and harvesting these resources has, in the past two centuries, become a very specialized field. To become a certified magical resource manager, one must undergo years of training, rigorous examinations, and, hardest of all, a mortality-free journey period involving hands-on contact with the resources in question. These days, magical resource managers are often middle children who seek further education after the nominal education appropriate to their accords-mandated station. However, there are some families, such as the Agricolae, who have historically been involved with the field since time out of mind, and ply their trade outside of the certification system. On the wall, one can see correspondence between Jacqueline Agricola and her mother while Jacqueline was negotiating with Robert de Raynon. Yes, Mr. Winchester, the frog prince mentioned in the labyrinth. Concerning the importation of vegetable lamps to satisfy his subject's cravings for meat without violating his strictures concerning the consumption of his kingdom's fauna. Jacqueline often served as a negotiator and ambassador, seeking to balance her family's welfare, the desires of those who did business with them, and the economic and ecological well-being of the kingdoms. Jacqueline was particularly adept at this role because she was intimately acquainted with the unfortunate results of well-meaning ignorance and the daredevil spirit of adventure in handling magical flora and fauna. She barely escaped starting a war with giants in her youth, and she single-handedly depressed her kingdom's economy when she introduced geese who laid golden eggs without sufficiently controlling their breeding and distribution. Her mother sent her to a cooperative for further education. One cannot, after all, fault a dragon's ability to instill discipline and tedious knowledge into the heads of wayward children, and carefully restored the natural balance. The Agricola family explored the intersection of enchanted objects and foodstuffs, pioneering methods of feeding people who are ensorcelled, sustaining their biological lives even when they've been spelled to sleep for a century, transformed into a tree, or otherwise rendered incapable of consuming foodstuffs in the usual human fashion. They forged an alliance of dwarven smiths, one of the most intricate contracts in recorded history, and monopolized the trade in the chalices, cauldrons, and utensils that transformed common food into compatible sustenance. The chalice on display is not particularly attractive, but the magic with which it is imbued allowed it to sustain a sleeping kingdom for 100 years. Do not mistake an unassuming appearance for power or the lack thereof. Miss Martin, Mr. Gottlieb, the maths required to understand the transmutation are well beyond your current skills. However, I invite you to apply to the museum for an internship in 5 years if you wish to pursue them further. Judging from your expressions and the emerging games of tic-tac-toe, it is time to move on. Very well, let us proceed to the next room. However, do not weep when you fail your pop quiz tomorrow. This is an educational field trip, not an excuse to act like hooligans. I thank you for your attempted courtesy, Mr. Stilinski, but I will open the door and your chaperone will hold it. That is, in fact, a working combination lock, and it is exactly as heavy as you would expect iron to be. Your chaperone's frown makes me think that someone has been caught between the rooms. Pardon me while I fetch him. Now, Mr. Stilinski, where were you failing to go? Yes, there are rooms not on this tour. However, none of you are of an age to visit the restricted spaces, which are the 6 shaded rooms on your rather antiquated museum map. Where did you come by such an object? Maya, your mother was an excellent intern. If you choose to return, contact the museum and request my presence. I will tell you some of the ridiculous trials she put me through. Now, go back to your peers. Unsurprisingly, various factions contested the Agricola monopoly and attempted to break it through various means. Consortia of experimental biologists, chemists, and farmers arose for a period of about 50 years, attempting to fuse magic and nature in new ways, often with tragic results. You can, I am certain, imagine the results of failed hybridization experiments when magic and hubris are both involved. The Minotaur, the guardian of a hedge maze, is one such result. Others may be found in restricted counterparts to this room. Your eyes and those of your peers were deemed too delicate to see such things. Suffice it to say that eating food created from dust is not a recommended way to maintain one's health, and that the giant carrot may, in fact, be able to feed 50 people, but it also denudes a countryside soil of all nutrients, rendering it a sterile wasteland for years to come. Famine is not pretty. Upon occasion, a consortium was successful, albeit in unanticipated ways. For example, when trying to create a grain that would replenish itself, with the rather absurd idea that it would allow the creation of a loaf of bread that would renew itself as long as the heel remained, one wondered if they considered the results of trying to eat such a loaf. One group accidentally engineered a grass that could be spun into gold. This was rather useless from a culinary standpoint, but Rumpelstiltskin, a master woodworker, painstakingly crafted a spinning wheel that could convert the straw into gold. He did, having heard of the debacle with the golden goose, patent the process and restrict its usage, voluntarily entering into a gas contract with the local Weaver's Guild. They sponsored his work in return for the exclusive use of its product for a period of 10 years. Unfortunately, it became a pawn in a local power struggle, and the result cloth of gold had to be dropped into a volcano, lest the gears rebound upon everyone involved. The local Weaver's Guild in question enjoyed unprecedented profits and reinvested the money in local schools and training facilities. As a result, the town of Aurelia has become the center of university education and scientific inquiry in the kingdoms. One of the few unqualified successes of the experimental approach was the creation of a sturdier vegetable lamp, a specimen of which you can view in this case. The vegetable lamp is, as the name would suggest, a plant that grows into a lamb-like creature. Sometimes they are referred to as poor man's mutton, but this is a misnomer, for they are emphatically not mutton. They are 100% pure vegetation in composition, and the grass they consume converts to, well, a bigger sheep, without any loss in the conversion process. Of course, sturdier did not mean sturdy, and the Agricola family remained the only shepherds with the resources and skills to grow vegetable lambs to maturity. They have even been able to shear their vegetable lambs, creating further profits from selling the most rare of wools. Eventually, the Agricola family brokered a deal with Magical Grafting Laboratories, the creators of the artificial vegetable lamp, the details of which remain confidential. Ultimately, however, the company received enough profit to close its doors. The experimental team found themselves disinclined to further experimentation when they were rich beyond their wildest dreams. They remain the only consortium to close due to success, instead of due to lawsuits or angry mobs of torches. The microscopes around the room are from their supply closets. And yes, Mr. Grant, you may look through them. The slides are from various of the experiments and are all clearly labeled. It was not unknown for a consortium's lesser experiments, like an unusually vigorous strain of screaming potatoes or roses impervious to the blades of mankind, to enter a kingdom's ecosystem. The results could, and did, require constant renegotiation of the trade agreements between kingdoms, as farmers' crops changed in ways that no one could anticipate. Please follow me through the hanging vines. I agree with your assessment that the tree in the middle of the room is spectacular. But I would ask that you pay attention to me for a few moments before you stick your grubby hands in it and ruin the display. Now, the tree is a family tree, and it is currently calibrated to display the lines of all of the current sovereign powers in the kingdoms. Before you inquire, as I'm certain you were about to, they did consent to this display. If you look closely and follow the limbs, you can observe their genealogies all the way back to the person whom they considered the founder of their line. Do keep in mind that their choice might not be the individual chosen by a discerning historian. If you come around to the back of the tree, there is a single blank branch. You can view your own family tree if you wish. The results will be shielded to your eyes only. Yes, Miss Granger, we do that through blood magic, but it is a perfectly innocuous spell endorsed by the Accords. Feel free to explore your own family trees, but do not tarry and prevent your peers from doing so as well. This is an interactive exhibit. It is not an exhibit for your personal gratification. Historically, middle children have been amongst the most distinguished diplomats and ambassadors in the kingdoms. Although birth order hierarchies have gradually begun to dissolve, this still remains true today, and 90% of our current diplomatic corps were neither first nor last born. This is why many of the boughs of the tree have branches in their middle which graft onto other boughs. Marriage and adoption are classic tools of diplomacy. When, for example, the road between trade partners has been rendered impassable by overgrown briars and shadow, the best way to ensure that one's partner is just as invested in finding an alternative route is to have the ruler's consort be your beloved and well-treated sibling or cousin. Yes, Miss Mori, the tree does display all the individuals whom you consider family. The magic is very finely wrought, and its determination of status is beyond even my understanding. There are some bloodline heirlooms that have made startling choices of owner in successive generations. This can, of course, lead to rather off-color commentary when an unsuspecting someone is suddenly inflicted with the burden of a questing sword or bound to the family's perpetual plough. Nonetheless, most citizens report that they would not strip their heirlooms of the binding magic, no matter how inconvenient they have been in the past. Now, Miss Pevensey, would you please open the door to the next room and hold it for us to proceed through? Yes, the door I just drew on the wall. I would not deface the museum to entertain myself. It is a fully functioning threshold. Thank you. Everything in this room is real. Everything in this room is lying. No comments from the audience? I'm surprised at your reticence. Everything in this room is lying, because everything in this room represents a particular point of view in a particular moment in time. Please take one piece of paper and a pencil and pass it down. Very good. Now, Miss Martin, please write something, a brief sentence on your paper, but do not let anyone see it. Whisper that sentence to Mr. Graham. Mr. Graham, write the sentence that she whispered to you down and then whisper it to Mr. Winchester. You can see how this works. I'm sure you've played a similar game at slumber parties. Now that the sentence has gone through the entire lot of you, let us see what we have written. Is anyone willing to disagree that E equals MC squared is rather different from elephant measures squiggles? No, I thought not. This room, the penultimate room on our tour, contains an array of objects, both quotidian and extraordinary, all of which have been used as proof of an historian's theory. You've seen me do this throughout the tour, and you should, in short time, engage in this exercise yourself. If you have completely failed to take notes prior to this point, I highly recommend that you select an object in this room as the subject of your essay. They are all rich in significance, and researching them would be a rewarding task. Personally, my favorite item is the Ballad of the Princess and the Dragon. Gregory the Gumptionless argued it was an allegorical exploration of sexual desire, and Jeremiah the Tedious argued it was based on an actual event in the Draconic Corporator's distant past. Historical opinion is divided, although my forthcoming thesis argues that they were both, if you will forgive the crudity of the expression, morons. Similarly, the ballads to elect the king of Gilderland have been used in an intriguing number of contradictory ways in analysing the brief rule of King Morgenstein the Fisherman, who became king because he rescued Princess Ariella, the daughter of King Philip and King Etienne. Did Morgenstein prove that hereditary rule was an outmoded method to select a sovereign? Did Morgenstern demonstrate the shortcomings of the general education system established by the Accords? Did Morgenstern exist only as a figment created by those who would establish a democracy? Think, analyze, and decide, children. Your chaperone and I have decided to allow you 30 minutes to explore this room. Use them well. No, I will not answer your questions. I am not writing your essay for you. The bibliography found in the exhibit catalogue is quite good. I suggest you use it. No, I will not take you to a previous room. You ought to have paid attention instead of whispering about your juvenile affairs. Let us proceed to the final station of the tour. You may enter the beanstalk through the pool on the floor. That means you have to enter it, not dither around the edges. Quit fretting, Mr. Winchester. Your brother's information is outdated and poorly researched. You are not going to grow a merfolk's fins. We are now in the centre of the beanstalk. It is, in fact, the actual beanstalk grown by Jacqueline of the Agricola family. Part of the agreement with the giants dictated that it would be used for educational purposes, not transportation, in the future. Its size makes it a unique vehicle to learn about magic. No, you cannot see anything. The sound you hear is the magic itself. I hear it as a heartbeat, but you may experience another noise. My sympathies if the noise is unpleasant, but we shall not stay here for long. Why? We are in the heart of a magical artifact. We are surrounded by pure magic, uncorrupted and unshaped. Enjoy this experience, for it is unlikely you will encounter another such artifact. Don't move. Let your bodies readjust to not being immersed in magic. That's it. Deep breaths. We have eye drops and paper towels if you need them, and there's a small room spelled to silence near the exit if you wish a moment to recover. You can find it by following the signs. Now, we have come to the conclusion of our tour. You were not, on the whole, terrible, so I will allow each of you to contact me once with a single question. Your chaperone knows how to reach me. Good day. You're back. Yes. You may re-enter the exhibit. That is what an all-day entry ticket guarantees. However, please note that your ticket contains instructions regarding thresholds. It would be time-consuming to extricate you if you were to lose your way in the liminal space. Enjoy examining the artifacts more closely, and don't get eaten by the Minotaur. A selection of newspaper articles concerning the youth of Jacqueline of the Agricola family. The Stalking Wheat, 3rd day, 13th month, 1025 Post Accords. Children of the Corn, proprietors. Citizens bite their noses at tax collectors. For the first time in living memory, all taxes have been paid. Every sentient resident of our fair land, from the meanest shadow to the mightiest oak-dwelling dryad, has given the treasury its due. It's terrible, said an unnamed representative of the Capital Revenue and Acquisitions Partnership. Everyone's paid their taxes. Early. There are no fines to levy. None. I can't imagine what this is going to do for our expenditures. Our budgeting depends on people's laziness and subsequent penalty clause invocations. When asked, local farmers and harvesters refused to comment on the source of their bounty.
Well, said one, good years do happen. It's inevitable, really. Ceres was very generous to us this year, and we have reaped well.
Conflicting reports circulate in Kingdom streets, and booking and betting continues in the usual places under the turnip leaves. The favoured explanation is straightforward. This year's sacrifices were particularly ripe, and the gods have, indeed, favoured our kingdom. Other speculative vagaries include shoe leather transmogrifying into diamonds overnight, an unlicensed curse, and waterfowl defecating precious metals. No dragon could be reached for historical comment. The Kingdom Crier, 20th day, 6th month, 1026 Post Accords, a subdivision of Monarch Scholastic Papers. J. Quentin Octor, editor. Crumbling Kingdom or Natural Cycle? A sense of unease permeates Panarium, the breadbasket of the kingdoms. Grain in the fields grows not, beer in the barrels ferments not, and rumours in the tavern rest not. Is the golden kingdom decaying from underneath? Can its mid-year crop yield compensate for a terrible spring? Scientists are saying the soil rapid that no nutrients remain, and opine that the soil would be less abysmal had it been scorched and then salted. What caused this precipitous decline in fertility? The dryads whisper of a mighty tree that drank all the magic from the land, and the giants speak of a new road into their countries. Jay of the Agricola family has been sent to the dragons for re-education, and the dynasty has been aiding local farmers without crafting blood contracts. One could speculate that these events are related, but such speculation would, of course, leave one subject to claims of libel. The Stalking Wheat, 17th day, 12th month, 1026 Postal Courts. Children of the Corn, proprietors.
Worst kingdom crash since Midas Patty Cake scandal!
Panarium's treasury overflowed this weekend, and inflation devastated our economy and cracked our bindings. All treaties of other kingdoms are subject to renegotiation under new terms, and reliable sources say that the ministers of taxation and investment have retreated into a fire swamp to meditate and restore their health. After the catastrophic crop failure of the cycle, Panarium seemed on track for recovery. Following countless hours of divining, 3 libraries of books, and no less than 42 heroic efforts, the Agricola stabilized the beanstalk that was supping from our lands, and it has since become the center of several magical studies, attracting sorcerer botanists, and their generous funding, to our fields in record numbers. Publicans reported that the scales of justice were satisfied, for the merchant who brought the terrible stalk into our borders had been sent on an adventure. The ledgers in the tax collector's books remained in the black after last cycle's generous universal overpayments, and the frost grape harvest promised vintners much joy. Alas, the peace of our kingdom was soon broken by the greed of miscreants. The golden goose continued to lay golden eggs, and unknown individuals conspired to divert them from their proper destination. They gilded Panarium's coffers without restraint, and treasure chests and walls groaned with the extra weight. All pacts, enchantments, and treaties tied to the relative value of our currency began to vibrate, and they snapped when the exchange rate between Panarium's gold coins relative to other kingdoms' currency became irrevocably distorted. The exchange between gold and marshmallows, gold and garnets, and gold and willow is particularly dire, leaving experts with little hope for recovery during our monarch's reign. The Ballad of the Princess and the Dragon.
Giving no ground to fear or doubt.
much danger, power risk confronted me. A dragon queen in her full glory, daring me to dance in the skies. But now we soar, we together, and survey all we see below. I spy someone who